I just got a call. Did you guys all hear that?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
If you can just briefly start over, I started the conference recording.
Oh, not a problem.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the official start.
This is the official.
Okay, very good. Again, my name is Bob Ivanoski. I'm a director with the Ivanoski Foundation here in Naperville, Illinois. It's a suburb of Chicago. And as I was saying earlier, I appreciate Marcia making that compliment about me being an expert in newborn screening, and I can assure you that I'm not even close. However, because of my situation in life as a father, I was given three children, two that are identical twins, ages six, and one that just turned four, that were all affected by a lysosomal known as metachromatic leukodystrophy. I think most of you folks that are on the call tonight have probably children or know of children that are affected with Pompe disease because of the fact this is an AMDA-sponsored call. And so I think we all can relate about what we're going to talk about tonight because we all have been affected. The reason why I chose to do what I did here in Illinois last year and help along with a lot of other people and organizations in bringing forward lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening to the state of Illinois was simply because of the fact that had my boys been properly diagnosed when they were first born, I would not have currently two boys that are terminal in their condition and one that is severely affected but has been treated, and fortunately the treatment has stopped the degenerative process of the disease. And I'm sure, and I know a few families that suffer from Pompe disease. And again, the whole idea of not knowing when the child is born and only discovering a year or 2 years later, the adage of the cow is long gone and the barn door is still open applies. And so, in a way, I was angry as a father that why could we have not prevented this the day the children were born, because there were treatment options available at the time, but because of the fact that my boys weren't diagnosed until 3 years of age, and by that time we already had a third child who was at that point a year old, we had no options for the older boys and had an option for the younger one, but because of the age of Jack, my one-year-old, he did have damage as a result of the disease. And so one of the very first things that we looked at doing was try to figure out how we could have prevented this. My twin boys were very early diagnosed with cerebral palsy, which is a very common diagnosis for what our disease is, at least initially, until the child begins to degenerate further and then a proper diagnosis is made. By that time, of course, treatment is not viable for the child. And so that really is what I thought of, is how do I take the decision-making process of the diagnostic odyssey away from the physicians and put it into a test that can be done at birth so that the parents know straight away that there's a problem with the child. And, of course, because of my selfish nature, I wanted to do it for the disease that my children were affected with. And this is what started the process that ultimately produced Senate Bill 1566 that went into a law in our state of Illinois back in November of 2007. So that really is going to be the talk tonight about how it is that we went from what I just described to having the governor sign that bill into law and thereby mandating lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening for the state of Illinois, which is the fifth largest birthing state in the United States. It produces about 185,000 babies a year. So we are a fairly good-sized state for newborn screening. And I want to talk with you folks that are scattered throughout the country, New Jersey, Texas, Virginia, California, Florida, Minnesota. There's some other folks that signed on after I kind of did this little tally. But here we have a a very collective organization of individuals throughout the United States that can take what we did here in Illinois, and it would have applicability in your states. And by no way, shape, or form am I saying that this is the cookie-cutter model, because obviously it has to adapt from state to state. But all I'm going to do is tell you my story and what we went through in doing this, which led to a successful outcome. And then, of course, that will help you folks in thinking about how it is that you go from tonight to bringing legislation forward in your states with regard to lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening, but not just LSD newborn screening, but all newborn screening. I am pro-newborn screening for all diseases. It just so happens that my children are in the LSD arena, but I want to make sure everyone understands that if the opportunity is available, we screen for everything, and that's just my personal opinion. But certainly this will have applicability to anything that deals with newborn screening. Let me give a very quick background on newborn screening in the United States as it stands today and the mechanism by how it operates, and then we're actually going to get into the nuts and bolts of lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening. Some of this may be a review for a lot of you, but I think it's important that we at least have a baseline for where we're going to go forward. Right now, because of the way our U.S. Constitution is written, the states have the control over how they screen newborns in our country. The federal government really does not play a mandatory statutory role at present in how we conduct newborn screening in the United States of all 50 states. How it pretty much is designed now is each state has a mechanism by which they screen their newborns, and of course, previous to a few years back, it was widely varied from state to state. Some states screened for more diseases than others, and it was depending upon where you lived, the baby you had maybe screened for more diseases than, let's say, somebody that was just across the state line, maybe 10 miles away, and they may have been screened for only half the diseases based upon what that state chose to screen for. And so that really is how it is done today. Now, there has been a very strong attempt and a very successful attempt as of June 2004. A committee was brought together, an advisory committee at the federal level of professionals and experts in this newborn screening arena, to help in developing a core panel by which states could look to the federal government at and say, this is what we should be screening for based upon what the feds are recommending. So it sort of gave the state something to look forward to and think about what it is that they should be having on their individual panels. And there has been great success in this country with what we've known as the Core 29. Where there's these 29 conditions. There's some secondary conditions as well, but we're going to stick strictly to the core 29, by which states would look at that panel and go, this is what we should be screening for if we aren't already. And so that went into process. Then the question came up with technology as it is, where it improves day by day, how is it that as newborn screening tests are developed, do we make that number 29 become larger, number 30, number 31, and so forth? And so that's what this particular federal committee set out to accomplish, is that not only to recognize what should be the standard as of today, but developing a process by which new diseases could be submitted that have, when I say new diseases, meaning diseases with new screening abilities, be submitted to the federal panel or the federal committee for review. And then if the federal committee, with this intellect that exists within the committee, deemed it an appropriate screen for a disease at the newborn level, then it would be added to the list. And we are in some very exciting times at present, because as I speak of that process is in is existing currently, and as of only a few months ago has that process started. Now, that does not prevent a state, however, like in Illinois' case, from going above and beyond what the Core 29 is and going out on their own as an independent state and adding additional diseases to the panel, even though the federal government is not yet recommending that particular disease to be screened for. And that was the case we fell in here in the state of Illinois. All that meant is we were a little premature in what it is we were asking our state to do. I think that for you folks now that are interested in doing this in your state, you're going to find that there is a greater acceptance of these lysosomal storage disorder screens than what we had in Illinois, because a variety of things have occurred since the legislation we put forward has gone into place that gives a stronger validation for these particular assays, and I'll discuss that in a minute. So that really, just in conclusion, is sort of how it works currently in the United States. So for all you folks that are in these various states, it is up to your state to determine what they should screen for, with the federal government strictly serving as an advisory or in an advisory capacity. So with that said, let's talk about lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening. For this particular discussion, we'll use Pompe as the example because that categorically fits into that family of disease. Back in the, and really to understand LSD newborn screening, we need to understand what was occurring in the mid-90s by an individual by the name of Dr. Nestor Chamoles. Brilliant man, probably the father of what is going, unfortunately he's dead, he died in 2005, but in the mid-90s and prior to that, he sort of developed and figured out a way by which to use tandem mass spectrometry to screen for newborn screen disorders, and not just LSDs, but just for a variety of newborn screen disorders, and that ultimately became what was known as the Core 29. A lot of the disorders that are in the Core 29 are now done by the way Nestor Chamoles was able to figure out how to do it through a high throughput mechanism very inexpensively and very quickly, and could do a large amount of them in a given day. So in the mid-90s, he sort of discovered how to do that and became kind of the father of newborn screening by using tandem mass spectrometry. Well, of course, he's a scientist and he's a researcher, so he continued with what he was doing. And in the early part of the millennium, he figured out how to use technology, primarily tandem mass technology, to screen for lysosomal storage disorders. And that really was the beginning of what we're talking about tonight. And he sort of developed a relationship with a lady by the name of Dr. Joan Coitzer. I'm sure many of you are familiar with that name. If you're not, she works for Genzyme Corporation up in up in Boston. And Joan took it upon herself, Dr. Coitzer took it upon herself to work with Dr. Chamoles to figure out how it could be that they could develop and refine these assays to be used in a high throughput mechanism. And when I use the word high throughput, what I'm talking about is being able to do 700-800 samples a day in a lab like Illinois, for example, which is only the fifth largest. After a weekend, we may have 1,000, 1,200 samples that we have to do in our lab based upon the babies that were born a couple of days previous. And so that becomes what's known as a high throughput mechanism. And she worked with Dr. Chamoles to sort of refine how that process could occur. Fortunately, she also brought in some other researchers that were stateside. Dr. Chamoles was down in South America, known as the Gelb Group. Dr. Michael Gelb out in Washington State, at the University of Washington at Seattle, a very good biochemist, worked alongside with Dr. Chamoles and also was refining and, you know, figuring out how to make these lysosomal storage disorder newborn screen assays work in a public health setting. Fortunately, enough information was shared between Dr. Chamoles and the Gelb group that when Dr. Shamoli's unfortunately died unexpectedly, enough information had been transferred where Dr. Gelb and his team was able to carry foot forward. And what occurred back when originally this whole concept was thought of, at the time they made a list of a number of diseases at that time that had potential cures or treatment options that were presently available. And that's how these particular diseases were chosen, and that's how they've stayed with that list since. Now, of the 12 that are in process, five were done right away. And I asked Dr. Gelb about a year ago why those first five became the five, and he says those were the easiest. And those, of course, being Pompe, Krabbe, Gaucher, Fabry, and Niemann-Pick disease. And so those assays were developed and refined by Dr. Gelb in his lab, the University of Washington, Seattle. And when they finally got to a level of sophistication that they could be handed off then to Genzyme, Genzyme took that technology and developed it in a high-throughput model that then could be used in a public health standard or a public health lab. And about that time, when all that was occurring, is when we as the Evanosky Foundation felt a tremendous need, because of what had occurred to our children, how we could not allow that to happen again. And the very first call that was placed was back in the May of 2006, and it was an interesting call because I actually called Dr. Gelb first. I Googled something about MLD newborn screen, and his name pulled up under Google. So I called him, and I said, I'm Bob Evanosky from the Evanosky Foundation, and I want to hire you to develop an MLD newborn screen assay. And he laughed because he says he's already doing it. And that was the start of me being introduced to Dr. Joan Koitzer, and this process began. So that's sort of kind of the background of how it is that it went from this concept by Dr. Chamoli's to how it kind of, if you will, got into the hands of Dr. Gelb and Genzyme and came to fruition as it did. Now, there's a few more things that I'm going to talk about the assays, but a bit later. But I wanted to give you that background so you understood how it was that these things were created and where we are now and how we're moving forward. Okay. With that said, let's talk about what occurred in Illinois and how it is that we went about doing what we did here and working side by side with the Department of Public Health along with the legislature to bring together a public act, a law, that allowed us to screen for lysosomal storage disorders. That process started really the summer of 2006 when we as the Evanosky Foundation sought out intellects, the key intellects in our state that dealt with newborn screening. They had a strong they were strong participants in that process within our state. In our particular example in the state of Illinois, the geneticist, the key geneticists that were here in this state, one of them was by the name of Dr. Barbara Burton. Dr. Barbara Burton is a geneticist at Children's Memorial Hospital here in Chicago. That's the premier pediatrics hospital here in the state of Illinois. When something really funky goes down with a kid, the child comes to Children's Memorial. It just so happened that she also was going to be taking over the position of chair of the advisory committee for newborn screening here within the state of Illinois. And so it was sort of it was convenient that we sought that particular individual out initially to make these inquiries about how we could take this technology that was being developed by Genzyme and place it in a public health setting like the state of Illinois to screen the babies of Illinois in the future. And so we sat with Dr. Burton and talked a lot about how it is that we could go about doing this. The one thing that I think we're sort of at a Y in the road now as far as where we were here within our state, and that was an understanding of how it should be. Should we go through the advisory committee? Most states, and I want to speak of this more generically because I can't act as an expert in how each state does their newborn screening, but from what I've surveyed of the states I've looked into, most states have some sort of a committee of individuals that exist within that state that are sort of experts, if you will, in newborn screening, in medical ethics, in chemistry and lab procedure. And this committee meets usually one, two, three times a year and talks about how newborn screening is occurring in their state. In our particular state, our committee size is probably 15 to 20 folks of those types that I've just described. And what they do then is they make recommendations to the Department of Public Health. In our state, that's who controls the newborn screening. And I don't want to say that's how it's done in every state because I can't speak to that. And then the Department of Public Health, based upon the recommendation of that committee, determines whether or not to implement what's being recommended or to not implement what is being recommended. And that comes a lot down, unfortunately, to the politics of the government bureaucracy. And so we, as a nonprofit organization and a very passionate organization, made a decision based upon that relationship between the advisory committee, and that's an important word, advisory, because that doesn't hold strength, at least not in Illinois. In the sense of whatever they say the Department of Public Health will act upon, because there are many other variables that the Department of Public Health has to look at when they're looking at what's being recommended to them by this advisory committee. Even though what comes out of an advisory committee may be excellent information, there may be other limitations that a particular government agency has over them that does not allow them to act upon that recommendation. And so that is why we decided to legislate the process of lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening, opposed to working through the advisory committee. What I'm trying to say here is that as other individuals that are in New Jersey and Florida and Virginia and Texas and so on, you'll need to investigate what process will work for you. We in Illinois chose to legislate it, but in other states, there may be a stronger relationship between the advisory committee and the Department of Public Health that allows you to administratively implement the process. So that's probably key number one, is you have to determine what's going to work for you. Now, with that said, I'm going to back up just a little bit because I don't want to dive too quickly into the legislative process, because that in itself is a chess game that I learned a lot about and can share that with you. I want to back up just a little bit about the education of this whole process. Mind you, lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening is a brand new thing in this world of ours. Even though things are occurring in Taiwan, in Austria, in the state of New York, soon to be in Illinois, soon to be in Washington State, there are a couple of other countries that are hemming and hawing around about their interest in getting lysosomal storage disorders. There is still a tremendous amount of people are very skeptical about lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening for a variety of reasons. Questionable treatments, the ethics of certain diseases that are under the lysosomal storage disorder family, should those be screened at birth or should those be screened at a later point in time? And so you still have a lot of folks out there that are uncertain if lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening is an appropriate disease family that should be screened for. The point I'm trying to make here is that how it is that we did so well here in the state of Illinois is that we were highly educated in understanding what the opponent, our adversary, if you will, which I don't like using the word adversary because that sounds confrontational. I think opponent is probably an appropriate term. What their arguments about this particular line of screening would be. And so we took it upon ourselves to become very educated, not only in those areas of concern, but also in lab procedures, in understanding the cost of what it takes to implement. We looked at understanding what type of questions government officials would ask as a layperson, because most, in our case, legislators are individuals not associated with the medical field. We looked at what the arguments would be from the physicians, from the ethics, from the ethical medical folk that are always involved when it comes to newborn screening. And we did that, we educated ourselves by going to Genzyme in Boston and meeting with those individuals and talking at length. We went out to Seattle and met with Dr. Gelb and looked at his process. We went up to New York and looked at Joe Orsini's lab that runs Crab-A to determine how their process was working. And in doing so, we became very savvy and very strong in being able to hold our own with what our opponents were going to say to us. And so not only do I stress the importance of understanding your state's process by which newborn screening is handled, be it through an advisory committee that is very closely knit with the Department of Public Health or whatever other agency administrates newborn screening, but also that you as the advocate, as most likely the parent, become a resident expert in this entire process from A to Z. I can't stress that enough. There were many, many of times that had I not been as sharp as I was in this particular area, I would have had the door shut on me. Because of the knowledge that I possessed, because of the time I invested prior to even starting this process, knowledge is power. I think Solomon asked for wisdom and everything else sort of followed. I think that's applicable in this particular situation. I can't stress that enough. And so with that said, we decided that we would legislate based upon the dynamic of the state of Illinois. Now, let's specifically, because we only did it that way in Illinois, I can only speak to that process, and I'll talk very specifically about that. First off, are there any questions up to this point?
No.
Is everyone following and feeling good about this? Because please, if there's a question, please interrupt.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
Sorry, I just had a question. Who would you say was your biggest opponent? You talk about an opponent, but who would you say fought you the most?
Ignorance.
It's
an interesting question, and that's a good question, actually.
I see what you're saying. Right, yes.
And you know, I always found that whoever challenged the process, and not me, but the process, be it the officials in the Department of Public Health, which they've become my dearest allies in this now, be it the legislators that were on the key committees that had to listen to this legislation, be it the various physicians that were high ranking in the newborn screening arena within the state of Illinois. Once they educate, and mind you, I'm just a dad. I mean, I'm nothing special here, but because I took the time out and I invested the time to educate myself, I became, in a sense, teacher to these individuals for that short period of time. And what we did is we educated. And by educating, we opened up their minds and we had them look at it in a different way than they had preconceived prior to the conversation. And before long, I saw people that were opponents starting to become participants. And so that is the one thing I stress the most, is that have a strong understanding. And with that, let's talk specifically about the five LSDs. We know most of you folks probably on the call tonight, unfortunately, have been affected with Pompe in some way, shape, or form. There may be others on the call that have had other diseases or other reasons why they're on the call. But understand this, that this is not a Pompe sort of process. This is a lysosomal storage sort of process. By the very nature of how these assays have been developed, you don't test just for one, you test for all. The cost of how it's done and to do it single-handedly is just as expensive to test for one as it is to test for all. And so when you are an advocate for this particular issue, you are an advocate, if you are a parent that has a child with Pompe, you are an advocate for lysosomal storage disorders, and the reason why you're involved is because you have a child that's been affected by Pompe. And that is the important thing we must remember, that we're doing this for the greater good of all of the diseases, because if you get all of them, you will get Pompe. Mind you, I'm metachromatic leukodystrophy. The first five that I legislated for, MLD is none of those. However, that's the next one on the block. I believe the order will be metachromatic leukodystrophy, then MPS1, then MPS2, then MPS6, and then Tay-Sachs. All of those will be tested in the exact same process by which we're testing the first five, very small incremental cost. So given in the next year to year and a half, we're going to become advocates of not five LSDs, we're going to become advocates of 10 LSDs, Pompe being one of those.
Bob,
so that is the power of this type of testing.
Bob, what are they estimating the cost to do the newborn expanded newborn screening?
You know, that, in, I can tell you exactly, in Illinois it's $2 a child,
okay.
Roughly. Now, mind you, our Department of Public Health in the newborn screening sector, and again, the personnel in the Department of Public Health are as good as it gets in Illinois as far as I'm concerned, only because of the fact that they are working. I'm going to be 40 here in a few months, so I was in high school a while back. My high school chemistry class was more sophisticated than my current Illinois newborn screening lab. So with bringing this license, that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I'm trying to put in the frame of mind what we were working with here. So we had some upfront costs that we're working with now to bring the lab up to a level of sophistication that a lot of labs in our country already have. However, our lab was a little bit behind, and so we are helping in that legislation with getting the proper equipment. We didn't even have the square footage to put the new equipment, so we have to do some expansion. And so for us, by the time you work it out, with the number of babies that are birthed here in Illinois, it's going to be about $2 for the five that are current, but it'll be about $2 for the 10, because the cost won't change much because the infrastructure doesn't change. You're just adding an additional disease. There is some incremental cost in the reporting and so forth, but nothing that is significant to be noteworthy.
Bob, did you say you could test all of the newborn babies in Illinois in one facility?
For lysosomal storage disorders, for the equipment that needs to be procured for that particular group of diseases, yes, all of the children could be tested using that process with the equipment that's needed, which is nothing atypical. Tandem
right.
mass spectrometers, which we already have, we would have to buy more, of course. Liquid handlers, which are a very common type of device found in a laboratory, any kind of a public health laboratory. And then, of course, the associated chemicals, which really are minimal.
Right, so that one facility can test for those five diseases in every child born in Illinois.
That's correct.
Yeah, wow. Yes,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
So that's a full-time job for that facility, I'm sure.
We're looking at two additional lab techs to run the equipment and then a couple of individuals to be on the reporting side. In our state, it's the lab side and then it's the reporting side. So with that said, when we decided that we needed to legislate it, we looked at who to legislate this for us. We were fortunate because 5 years previous, our state brought in tandem mass spectrometry, partly because there was a child born that died of a disease that was currently being screened for, but not in Illinois. An individual by the name of Joe Baptist, the grandfather of this child that died, came forward and with Senator, at that time was Representative Dale Ryder, now he's a senator, was from his district. They worked with the Department of Public Health to legislate tandem mass spectrometry to screen for the Core 29 in Illinois in the early part of the millennium. So we already had a savvy legislator that knew about newborn screening and was passionate about newborn screening. And of course, the people that I had surrounded myself with and learning more about this in Illinois knew well of Senator Ryder because all of these folks had been around for, you know, 10 or 20 years. And so back in December 26, the day after Christmas of 2006, I sat along with Dr. Barbara Burton and Joe Baptist with Senator Dale Ryder, and we talked about bringing legislation forward that would mandate lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening in the state of Illinois. Now, mind you, Illinois is a Democratic state, heavily controlled by the Democrats. Senator Dale Ryder is a Republican. That did at time pose some challenges, but what I found was that it became a bipartisan type issue because everybody has babies. I don't care if you're white or if you're black or Hispanic or Asian. All of us are affected by lysosomal storage disorders, be it a Republican or be it a Democrat or an independent. We all fall victim. And so what I found was after proper education and a lot of political wrangling, and that was my hat off to Senator Ryder because of his skill as a politician, we got bipartisan support and people came together. Every vote that occurred both in the Senate and the House were unanimous in favor of the bill. Never was there anyone that voted against it. And so I think that shows you the power of what legislators think of in newborn screening, because they recognize that as grandparents and parents themselves, that this can strike it at any time to anyone. It's that great unknown of the human genome. So I think that, however, as much as I love Senator Ryder, he's one of my dearest friends, I'll go to the grave commending that man because of what he was able to do. There was a challenge in him being a Republican in a democratically controlled state. It was only because of his skill and savviness that didn't really pose a problem. I do want to caution all of you that if you do choose to be legislative in nature and how you implement your process in that way, that you really seek out and understand. In a sense, now we're going back to high school government, understanding your state's legislative process and understanding who are the key players in that process and who is it that controls that process, because there are a select few that have tremendous power in any state legislature. And so because I asked Senator Ryder to do it only because of the fact that he was successful 5 years previous with other newborn screening legislation, had he not been as savvy of a politician as he was, I don't think it would have worked, him being a Republican in a democratically controlled state. So I want to warn all of you that when you are seeking out who it is that you would like to associate with in the way of a legislator, it has to be someone that is compassionate to the cause, that has some sort of an association. It just so happened that Joe Baptist was a dear friend of his, so when Joe Baptist's grandson died, it did affect Senator Ryder, at the time representative, but he was impacted by that, and it became personal. And then, of course, when we sought him out and he met my children and saw what had occurred, he also had that same kind of passion. So not only do you have to look for someone of great passion, but you also have to look at strategically who is the powerful politician that will make something like this become a reality. It will make your life so much simpler. And the process will be so much quicker, because if it is associated with the right politician, the bill can sell to soar through the legislature like you've not seen. Because I've seen that done with other bills that were working side by side of mine that had no opposition. And it is that political process that we call democracy, which is so great in my opinion, but at the same time can be challenging in that arena. Something to think about. And so with that, what we did when we decided to develop the legislation, one of the very first things that Senator Ryder told me was the power of the people. And we recognized with his help that a coalition had to be formed, and this is where the AMDA came into play. I didn't know of you folks until I created this legislation. And I found you on Google, along with all of a lot of the other organizations that became part of the coalition that made this bill a reality. Had it been done single-handedly by the Evanosky Foundation, it never would have flown, never would have gotten off the ground. The power of the people, in addition to Senator Ryder, is what made the other senators and representatives, when the bill came into their ownership, understand how important it was. At one time, we locked up a representative's server with emails. We shut the server down because he got too many emails and he couldn't get any more emails. And they were all from individuals that were supporting Senate Bill 1566. A lot of those came from the AMDA. And we estimated at one time we had a population within the coalition of around 10,000 people that were all across the country, not just within Illinois, that were sending these emails and these letters to these individuals telling them the importance of newborn screening for these children because of what had occurred to them or how it had affected. And I remember one representative pulled me to the side and said how that really made a difference in making them understand the importance of this type of legislation. And so we were fortunate to have these various agencies associated with the Evanosky Foundation to become the coalition that it was. So I recommend that whatever you do, you'll have to go outside of the Pompe family because there are many organizations out there that support the other four diseases, hopefully soon to be 10, that will be just as interested as your organization with regard to Pompe in being involved in the legislation that you're creating because they have a vested interest with the disease that's associated with that in that same collective group as Pompe. And by doing a little bit of front-end work and getting the coalition organized, you become a very unified, powerful fighting force. And when you, through the power of the Internet and the power of email and how quickly electronically communication can occur now in today's society, you become a formidable force with your associated legislature to show them how important the legislation is. And let me tell you what, politicians respond to that type of grassroots organization. And that was decreed to me by Senator Ryder very early on because he, as a veteran politician, knows and understands and respects the power of the people. So I encourage all of you, if you do take that route of legislating, that you develop that type of coalition, that it be beyond just your state, it be beyond just your disease, because that is a powerful tool in making things happen. The other thing is media. The power of media is impressive. I feel, even though I'm 40 years of age, I just was born about a year ago on a lot of these issues that came across my desk. I was naive at the political process and the power of media. Yes, I was aware of it, and you know, you've always heard those adages, but until you live it and see what can occur by a simple newspaper article or a TV spotlight in the news, and it be done at key points in time where the legislation exists, you have another formidable force that comes to that legislation and aids it in helping you make that go forward. So I encourage you to reach out to your publications that are in your state. They all have an interest in these types of stories. They have an interest in furthering technology. They have an interest in seeing how government interacts with technology. Trust me, they do, because they want to explain that to the power of the people. Mind you, my story was not about a family of five, me, my wife, and my three sons. It was about a story that affected 185,000 children annually in the state of Illinois, collectively several million people. And so the Chicago Tribune, the mainstay of Illinois, saw that as a potential because they wanted to inform the public. And so I got a hold of a reporter that we spoke with at length and was always following the story and at times published certain things at certain times, and it became very helpful. So I recommend that that also be part of your toolbox, your toolkit, if you will, on how you make this a reality. We obviously did key visits to key legislators. We used some of the organizations. The March of Dimes was loosely affiliated. There were multiple aspects of the legislation. One of those was the lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening. There were two other components that the March of Dimes gainfully supported. They were supportive, not directly supportive, of lysosomal storage disorders because they follow the recommendations set forth by the federal committee in an advisory capacity. So they could not sort of hopscotch in front of the advisory committee and support these five lysosomal storage disorders. But they were supportive in nature in wanting newborn screening to prosper and to further. So they were there with us. And the Illinois chapter of March of Dimes worked side by side with us, working with those key legislators to come in and make personal visits. And I recommend that you also reach out to your March of Dimes chapters, your state chapters in the states that you exist, because they are pro-newborn screening. They may not be pro in the sense of being directly supportive of the five lysosomal storage disorders, but they will support you and help you because they want to see newborn screening thrive. It's sort of an interesting relationship, but I think you'll find them to be opened and willing to help you in what it is that you're trying to do. And we all know that the March of Dimes is a household name, so it's a very powerful name when you sit before a particular senator or indoor representative with them present and talk about these issues to educate. That comes back to having that arsenal of knowledge in you so that you can properly give them all of the things that they need to hear that are going to counter when they go and investigate the opposition's position, because they will, how it is that you've told them what they need to know so they can understand what the opposition's saying really is not as solid as what potentially the opposition thinks. So that's something else that I recommend, is making those visits. And if it's not with the March of Dimes, you're just as effective, especially if it's a politician that's within your district and or you've recognized families within your state that suffer from these various diseases, and you engage them and encourage them to reach out to their key legislators within their district and share that. I can assure you it is uncommon for someone to seek out and go visit their senator and or representative. They'll be warmly welcomed, but it just doesn't happen on a daily basis. And so when it does happen, the senator and or representative makes note of that, because that's sort of a special occasion, because you don't have that sort of just pop-up citizen walking in that's within their district and talking about a particular bill that they want them to look at. Again, something that was very, very handy. Any questions up to this point?
And it's 7:51, so you have 9 minutes left.
Okay, very good. Let's see. I'm just looking through my notes here to make sure I have a checklist here of things that I certainly wanted to discuss with all of you folks. Okay, let's talk about today and forward and how it's going to be easier for you folks than what it was for us. That really was the pioneer art, when I say us, meaning the collective body, the coalition, of how it is going to be so much easier for you folks, because some validity has been brought forward to the with regard to these lysosomal storage disorders. The Centers for Disease Control now, as of just about a week and a half ago, are the one and only distributor of these assays free of charge. What's happened is Genzyme, because of their social consciousness, and mind you, they are a for-profit company, so there is a benefit there in saving children, but at the same time being able to make money in doing that, and that's, thank God for that. So we're thankful that sort of dynamic occurs. But what Genzyme Corporation has done is, working with the Centers for Disease Control, primarily the CDC Foundation, they are funding the ability for the CDC Foundation, and then thereby providing it to the CDC, the means of which they take these assays, the actual chemical that determines whether or not the child has the disease or not, and that's used in the lab process in the public health arena, and they send those to the CDC free of charge, and then in turn fund the CDC in such a way that any public health lab, be it within the United States or the 470-some labs that the CDC supports worldwide, any of those labs has the right to call the CDC and say, please ship me these assays, and they will do that for free. And not only does that occur, but also the CDC's quality assurance program puts their stamp of validation to make that basically states the chemicals that we are sending you have been checked also by us and are valid and proper chemicals that we're sending to you and will yield you proper results, meaning that we're not going to send you a bad batch. So not only does Genzyme have a quality assurance program, but using the CDC as their distribution network, the CDC also runs it through their quality assurance program so that any public health lab is receiving a product that has that sort of stamp of approval, if you will. That is something that is revered by public health labs because all of the public health labs within our country work with the CDC with quality assurance. And so when the state of Illinois found out that that process was to occur, mind you, this only occurred about 10 days ago, they felt much more comfortable about letting this legislation move forward because they were looking and seeking that sort of quality assurance. What they were fearful of, there was going to be this homebrew concoction that was going to be given to them and they were going to use, and they didn't even know how accurate or valid it was. With that said, as of today, to date, Dr. Hu out of the University of Taiwan has screened about 189,000 newborns for Pompe disease. Of that, 6 cases of Pompe disease were confirmed. His manuscript for the screen has been accepted in the periodical Pediatrics, and a manuscript for the clinical response of treatment provided, because all these children are being taken care of at birth, is currently being written. Also, Austria, which is one of the countries that is screening for Pompe disease, at present it is an anonymous pilot program. They look to launch publicly. Austria births about 85,000 children a year. As of March 2008, they are going to go public if everything runs as is scheduled. But the anonymous pilot program has only allowed secondary recalls because of a false positive of less than 0.1%, which is extremely accurate. And that's a big concern in the public health arena because the more false positives you have to run as a secondary, your costs go up. And so what we're seeing out of these assays is that they're highly refined and highly accurate. And as a result, the cost, the follow-up cost, are minimal compared to other assays that are currently in use for other diseases. So not only do we have a quality product just by its inherent nature, but we also have that validation that's provided by the CDC under their quality assurance program. The only reagent that has not yet been shipped to the CDC but will be shortly is Crab A. I believe they're still working out some aspects with the Crab A disease. That's one of the 5. But Pompe has sailed through. And as of today, if you had a public health lab, you could call the CDC and have them send you the Pompe reagent to screen babies with. And they're good to go.
And that's okay. Actually what Genzyme is helping fund is the reagent, right? The actual shipping of the reagent or the upkeep of the reagent or both?
Both. Manufacturing of the reagent, distribution of the reagent, and then making sure that the CDC is properly funded so that quality assurance can occur, meaning there are personnel down there running the quality assurance testing to make certain that what is being sent out to a public health lab like Illinois, for example, once we're up and running it, that we're getting a good batch of reagents. Because the biggest fear is that you run a batch of, let's say, 5 or 6,000, which I think one batch of reagent can handle, and it's a bad reagent, and you get hundreds and hundreds of inaccurate reporting,
right.
That would be catastrophic.
Yep.
And a public health lab just wouldn't know how to handle that. It would literally be meltdown, kind of a catastrophic sort of occurrence. And that's why it's so important that that they were able to get the CDC involved and validate the assay so that there was that confidence that we did not have when we were working with the Department of Public Health, because it had not occurred yet. If it wasn't for the CDC vouching for us, because our Department of Public Health did call down to the CDC and said, hey, is what this coalition telling us the truth? And the CDC says, yeah, we're working on it, and we're going to be ready to do this by January of 08. I could see the stress of the officials within the Department of Public Health melt away, because they knew, just like all the other stuff that they currently run, that the CDC was going to be involved in the quality assurance. Mm-hmm. So that really made our job so much easier once that was validated. Okay.
2 minute warning.
I think we are pretty much through here of what I really wanted to speak about tonight. It is a rather large topic. I think for you folks that have a strong desire to do this in your state, I would love to speak with you individually, and would be happy to do that. And I have other individuals that would love to speak with you individually. I spoke with Dr. Joan Koitzer at Genzyme a few days back, and she would be happy to speak with you individually. There are many resources available for you as individuals to do something like this in your states. Of the five LSDs, four of them have had applications submitted to the Federal Committee for review to be added to the core panel. Now, there's a process by which that has to go through, and it will take some time, but four of the five have been done, Pompe being one of those. It's my understanding, and don't quote me on this, but I believe Dr. Kashani was part of the team that put the application together for Pompe, and that is down at the Federal Committee for, or is under review. So our hope is that given the time it takes for that Federal Committee to give their blessing on these particular diseases, that not only will we see it be implemented from state to state, but it will also be a recommended disease on the federal core that is advisory in nature. So,
what did you say the name of the Federal Advisory Committee was again?
The name?
Yeah.
It is, let me get you the official, it is a arduous, lengthy name. Let me get you the official name here. Here we go. It is known as the Advisory Committee on Heritable Disorders and Genetic Diseases in Newborns and Children. The acronym is ACH. DGDNC. We call it the Federal Advisory Committee. It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
And that is, they assist the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to make those types of things that I talked about, the advice and recommendations, technical information, develop policies and those sort of things, and also to basically improve our ability as Americans to minimize the mortality and morbidity in newborns and children with regard to these types of disorders, ones that are inherited from our parents, or you know, that's in our particular family's gene code. And so as a result, those applications have been submitted and are under review, which even gives stronger positioning for people that are looking to do this in their states in the future, because it is at that level and being considered. So, in conclusion, because I know, Marcia, we're 2 minutes past now.
No, that's all right.
In conclusion, for you folks that really, really are interested in doing this, and let me put a caveat on this, it is a lot of work. I'm not going to spoon-feed you, sugarcoat this. It is a tremendous amount of work. However, I believe it's half as much work as what we had to do initially. It's still a lot of work, though, because we sort of figured out, we made a lot of mistakes, and we learned from those mistakes. And so our goal, our position on all of this is that we want to share our knowledge in the mistakes that we made and what was a benefit, what we did well, as a coalition, so that individuals that are in New Jersey and Florida and Virginia and California and Minnesota and Texas can go forward either to their committees and or their legislature and replicate what occurred in Illinois. And in doing so, we get more coverage for more children. The idea is that we leave this place a little better than we found it. And it's because of people like you that that's going to happen. So please reach out to me. I'm at www.evanoskyfoundation.org. My telephone number is 630-236-8039. Email address through the foundation is simply evanoskyfoundation@evanoskyfoundation.org. And I'll tell you everything I know. And I'll help you.
Bob, hopefully this isn't too broad of a question, and you can answer it quickly if that's possible. But on February 22nd, coming up here, I have to go to Tallahassee. It's a Florida Genetic Newborn Screening Advisory Council meeting.
That's correct. That's very similar. That's the committee that does what the folks up in their committee does in Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been to one. Dr. Barry Byrne, we talked about before, he's the one actually had his secretary contact me about it, and she wrote one of the Department of Health, Sherry Hood, Florida Department of Health, actually told us when it is and what time it is and everything else. So I guess the question would be is, what should I look for? I don't think they're going to have me speak or anything like that. I think I'm just basically going to be observing. And I guess this is all part of the learning process.
Well, I think, and that's a good question, because that's a good example for everyone else to sort of learn by. Obviously, every state has these meetings, be it quarterly or every 6 months or once a year. You'll have to find out in your state. And really how you do that is by looking at your Department of Public Health and newborn screening. Then you'll sort of have to do probably some detective work. But ultimately, you're going to figure out who's in charge of that committee that you can reach out to and figure out when they meet. Generally, that's all public information, so it should be available via the Internet. In your particular case, George, Dr. Byrne, I believe, is I'm going to state this only through observation, is a supporter of lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening.
Yes.
At least I believe he is. He is your contact by which it becomes a discussion with the committee. You as an advocate, as a dad, affected personally by this, will need to make a decision really what the position of the committee is. Are they excited about it? Are they not excited about it? Are they kind of lame duck about it? Are they aggressive about it? And you will then need to determine as that advocate in Florida, as that father that's personal to, are you effective working with the committee and bringing this to fruition? Or do you need to sort of kind of work with the committee but also legislatively move forward with it so that you can get this done in an appropriate timeline and not something that may take 4 or 5 years to implement? And I think that that meeting in February will be kind of an observation sort of way for you to determine, can I work with these folks? Are they hungry for bringing new technology to my state? Can they do this? Or do I need to seek out a legislator that can make it the law of the land? Mm-hmm. And I think that is what February will tell you. And then you will move forward from there on you're at the bottom of the Y, and you're going to have to make either a left turn or a right turn. And I think February will tell you which way to go.
Right, I'll find out the attitude. I don't know if this is a every 6 month or an annual meeting. I guess that can kind of tell you about their aggressiveness is how often they have meetings.
Well, I can also tell you, though, that Florida is top of the food chain with regard to newborn screening. I believe they are screening for everything, and even I think cystic fibrosis. Now, don't quote me on that. Either they're currently screening for it or they're getting ready to screen for it, which makes them prime for the plucking because they've done everything that's been recommended by the federal advisory committee. So if they're looking to do something new and want to investigate lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening, they have a very good product to use for their babies in Florida. And I believe Florida is within the top five states in the U.S. for birthing.
Right.
So you guys are a heavy hitter when it comes to states that have a large birthing population to really make an impact.
Right. Yeah, cystic fibrosis actually is now in effect.
And you guys are prime for the plucking. I would consider you low-hanging fruit for looking at lysosomal storage disorder newborn screening, Pompe disease included, as their next move in the newborn screening process.
Right. Yeah, no, I look forward to this meeting, definitely.
Anyone else have any questions? Marcia, thank you very much for having me on the call.
Thank you, Bob.
I hope I was informative enough.
Absolutely.
And again, I can't stress enough for you folks, if you want to talk more, please call me.
We will.
And we can really help you get started in making a difference for those children that are going to be birthed in the future.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so
All
much
right,
for
Bob.
Taking
Thanks
the time.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
You bet. Everyone have a good night.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.